WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi everyone, welcome at WaveAct. Today with a special guest, Zach Gell, who is the co-founder and chief communication officer at the EOS Network Foundation. And today we will talk about a possibly wide range of topics, but we will start with two VMs, one goal. So first of all, thanks, mate, for being here. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. And yeah, we'll start with what are you currently working on? And, you know, what's happening with EOS right now? What are you currently up to? What bothers your mind? Let's put it that way.
So a lot of things. Since DNF was founded in September 2021, we essentially are a grassroots foundation born out of our own community, launched the foundation 3 years after the network launched in June 2018. We just recently celebrated our five-year anniversary since the first block was created. We've gone 5 years with zero downtime, so it's a highly reliable blockchain, over 1,800 days without any issues. As far as what we're currently working on, a number of things. Like I said, it's a multi-pronged approach. So within our ecosystem, we have obviously the ENF. We provide a lot of the core development for the underlying software of the EOS network, which is what we call the Antelope Protocol. And on top of that, we are also just launched on April 14th, the EOS EVM, which is an enterprise-grade, highly scalable EVM. It's at version 0.5 right now. So as an early version, we are rapidly innovating. We're currently, our engineering and product teams are kind of formulating the long-term product roadmap. A lot of people want to know where we're going with the EVM. So right now, as it stands, it has parity with the with Ethereum itself. Anything that you could deploy to Ethereum, any tool that you would use with Ethereum, you could use on the EOS EVM now. So that since launching the EVM, we've seen a huge influx of new developers, new projects launching, and a lot of that is because new doors have been opened. EOS has been around since, like I said, it launched in June 2018. But it is a non-EVM Gen 3 smart contract platform. And with that, it has perks. So it's highly performant. We've proven that different times throughout the life cycle. We've had times of heavy congestion where we were processing over 100 million daily transactions for a period of months at a time. Didn't go down then. And with our EVM, we've been comparing the benchmarks to other EVMs. And one of the statistics that we're showcasing and really hitting on is something called swaps per second. So the reason we're choosing this metric to kind of compare blockchains to EOS, in particular the EOS EVM, is because I could tell you how performant EOS is as a native base layer, but it's not an apples to apples comparison because 90% of blockchain activity as it stands today is on EVM-based chains, whether it's Ethereum itself, Polygon, Avalanche, you name it. A lot of the developer and user activity is happening on EVM-based chains using a lot of DeFi protocols, and a lot of DeFi protocols are forks of other DeFi protocols with different changes to them that make their flavor different. So, for example, I could take a Uniswap fork and deploy it to Polygon, I could deploy it. It's already deployed on Ethereum. I could deploy it on Avalanche. And I could also deploy it on the EOS EVM. So it's a very apples to apples comparison, the exact same code base and the exact same system. And swaps are a type of transaction that are more complex than a simple transaction. Whenever we're talking about blockchain scalability, everyone wants to push the transactions per second. How many TPS can you do? A lot of times it's hard to differentiate between what's marketing and what's actual the performance on the mainnets. And also there's different ways that different blockchains calculate transactions per second. Solana is one of the ones that stand out in doing it much differently. They count peer-to-peer communication between their nodes and their consensus as transactions, whereas most other networks don't actually put that on the blockchain. It's usually a back-end peer-to-peer communication channel separate from the blockchain. So with the swaps per second benchmark, it really came from research done by Dragonfly Capital in early 2022. And what they were doing was they were trying to showcase how Solana was much more performant than all of the existing EVMs. Their pitch was essentially EVMs are the MS-DOS, Solana is the Windows. And the conclusion was essentially there's a lot of room for growth in blockchain scalability. By their metrics of swaps per second, the fastest one was Solana. They compared it against the EVMs, which is not apples to apples, but they got about 240 swaps per second with Solana, which is much less than the tens of thousands of transactions per second that they market themselves as. The fastest EVM was Binance Smart Chain. I don't have the graphic in front of me, but everything was between 60, Ethereum was less, but let's say 50 to 200 swaps per second. So whenever you hear those numbers, they're quite low compared to the transactions per second. And the reason is because when I measure a transaction, it's essentially sending token from wallet A to wallet B back and forth as fast as I possibly can. It's the most simple transaction that you could do on a blockchain. And it's also using the protocol token. So if you think of like gas fees, the more complex your transaction is, the higher the gas fee. That's why it costs more to transfer an ERC-20 token than it costs to transfer Ethereum. And then if you do a staking action on a DeFi protocol, it's going to use a lot more gas than a transfer. And if you do a swap, it's a more complex transaction than a basic transfer. Because whenever you do a swap, you're reading both sides of the pool. You're swapping multiple tokens across multiple wallets. And you're also distributing yield a lot of times. Some of the yield goes to the LPs. Some of the yield goes to the protocol. So there's a lot of things happening in a swap transaction. It's much more complex than a basic transfer. So that is the metric that we're using. And we've benchmarked our EVM currently at 800 swaps per second. So it's four times more performant than the next closest EVM. And that's an apples to apples comparison. So we're really focused on highlighting those numbers, showcasing the speed and performance of the EOS EVM. And right now, and for the foreseeable future, we're working on improving the EVM. Our base layer is still being worked on. There's still a lot of tooling and SDKs being developed that makes it easier to develop on a blockchain. But that infrastructure takes time to build, and the existing knowledge base, the existing open source code, the existing tooling that exists in the Ethereum ecosystem is ready and available now. And now it's accessible to the EOS community and the EOS network with all of the performance that comes with the EOS network. So we're working on, as far as what we're busy with, it's developing the technology for both the base layer of EOS and the EOS EVM layer. And also there's a heavy business development effort going on in the background to bring on partners and collaborators to kind of showcase the performance of this EVM, because it could be as fast of a train as you want, but you need to have passengers on that train. And that's really what a lot of the focus is right now, is we have the capacity. We just need to fulfill a lot of the supply side to really showcase the capabilities of the EOS network.
Wow. thanks for that intro. When we talk about that EVM layer, the question that I as a dev would have now, and I don't think you are a tech person, so please bear with me, and it's totally fine if you can't answer it, but how is the EVM layer connected to the EOS layer?
Yeah, so it's essentially a virtualized, emulated version of the Ethereum EVM written inside a smart contract on EOS. So it's somewhat similar to what you'll see on Near Protocol. So they have the Aurora EVM. It's a smart contract on top of Near. The Solana has Neon EVM. It's a smart contract on top of Solana. The difference with our, so those are all smart contract based on top of a highly scalable base layer, and that base layer doesn't use Solidity code, basically. You're writing with Rust on Solana. Off the top of my head, I can't think of what NEAR is, but it's essentially a smart contract. It's a runtime. It's a separate runtime built on top of EOS. So it leverages all of the speed and scalability of the base layer, but it abstracts all of what's different about EOS. If I'm a Solidity developer, if I have an application that I've already built, if I wanted to deploy it to EOS, I would have to completely rebuild it, writing in C++ or Rust if you're using Rust SDKs. So it's a huge hurdle to collaborate with the wider Web3 space because it's different tech. So with the EVM layer, it really makes it compatible with everything else and existing projects also. But yeah, I don't know how to better describe it other than a smart contract on top of the base layer, which also means that it's like a virtual blockchain. It's a blockchain within a blockchain. It's like blockchainception. And what's really interesting about that is it's the EOS EVM is a single user interface for developers and end users, and it'll always feel like and appear to be a single EVM. Whereas the base layer underneath, in January, we launched Antelope IBC, which is inter-blockchain communication protocol. It enables elastic scalability at the base layer, so scaling horizontally in parallel. Currently, capacity is not so much an issue. There's plenty of capacity within a single thread. But over time, as demand increases, the base layer could actually scale horizontally. Whereas on top of that, in the smart contract layer of the EOS EVM, it'll remain a single interface. So all applications will have limitless horizontal scalability because it inherits the underlying scale of the base layer. And that's very much different than the scaling strategy of, let's say, rollups or other L2s, because with those, for example, with Optimism, their goal is to kind of create a super chain of multiple shards that can communicate with each other. But the problem is that doesn't exist today. So what I envision will happen with most L2s is they're still capped at about 1 to 2,000 transactions per second. I don't know all of their swaps per second on the L2s. But what we're going to see in the next cycle, whenever all of the blockchain vacationers show up and all of the chains get heavily used, is all of the DeFi is going to kind of congregate on a single shard, a single rollup. And then you're going to hit the same scaling limitations that we've seen with Ethereum, except it's going to be with a higher floor. So instead of hitting your ceiling at 14 transactions per second, you're going to hit it 1,000 transactions per second. So maybe gas fees won't be $200, but they might be $50. Which is still entirely too high. And whenever you don't have the reason it would all be on a single shard is because you can't have atomic transactions between L2s. So you could have multiple instances of optimistic rollups or ZK rollups, but you can't do atomic transactions between them. And that's quite important to DeFi, especially is because a lot of DeFi transactions are quite complicated. They might touch multiple protocols. You can think of like a flash loan where I have to have collateral. I borrow capital from Aave or something similar. I make a swap on Uniswap and then I do something else with my tokens. And it all happens within a single chained transaction. And if any piece of that chain of the transaction fails, then the transaction just fails. It never goes through. You lose that capability whenever you start sharding the blockchain and start trying to interoperate between different shards or different rollups. So we're taking the approach of a single, highly scalable EVM layer with the scalability abstracted and hidden underneath it at the base layer. So that's one of the big differences in our approach to scalability.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting. You said, I'm just plugging in something we discussed before our podcast, since EOS, interestingly, as you mentioned in the beginning, I think during the podcast as well, is not led by its original founders, right? And I would be curious on how, I read that EOS has a super active community, right? So a shout out for that, for persisting that over years, right? I would be curious on how active is the infrastructure work, if you know that, and how does that all, you know, fit together? Like, I just want to get some context. That's why I'm asking this, you know, how does it look like for EOS right now?
So EOS as it stands today is completely grassroots, community driven. Even the foundation itself was born out of the community. Like, my origin story is as a community member. I worked, been in the EOS ecosystem for years. I've been full-time in the Web3 space since 2017 during the hype ICO cycle. I worked for an ICO marketing company, worked with hundreds of ICOs at the time. Like, I analyzed them all, and I kind of got into EOS because it stood out at the time. So I've been there since the beginning. Many other community members were there from the beginning also. EOS is most famous for a $4 billion ICO that was conducted throughout 2017 and 2018. A lot of people, and I even said it there, EOS and ICO. It was, in retrospect, it really wasn't an EOS ICO as much as it was a Block One ICO. Block One being the company that initially developed the software for EOS and also operated the token sale, where they took in over $4 billion of Ethereum in that token sale. So essentially, that company during the ICO and for a year or two after made a number of promises that they were going to build certain things, invest $1 billion into the EOS ecosystem. So that there was a lot of promise, especially in 2018 when the chain first launched, because at the time there weren't other scalable layer one blockchains. There was Ethereum and then like forks. There really wasn't Solana, there wasn't Polygon, there wasn't anything. So a lot of forward-thinking blockchain enthusiasts kind of congregated around this EOS project. Unfortunately, over the years, it became apparent that the initial founders of the company were not deploying the capital that they claimed that they would. After raising that $4 billion, very little of that actually went back into the ecosystem. They did multiple buybacks for their shareholders, which who did really well, the Block One shareholders. But the EOS token holders were kind of left high and dry without any source of funding or community funding. The only way to earn income was through being a node operator, essentially. Was you could generate income from the network by operating infrastructure. But that's not enough. There's so much more to an ecosystem than the base layer. You need the tooling, you need the grant, you need the grant frameworks, you need the community support, you need the marketing. Who's going to go talk at conferences? Who's going to make partnerships? You need a mechanism to do that, and EOS lacked that for several years while kind of waiting, kind of giving the initial company a chance to prove itself. It's okay to stumble a few times. So it's kind of like one mistake, shame on me or shame on you. And then over a period of time, it just became apparent that they weren't going to do what they said. And the last leg that they had to stand on was the engineering of the code. Even though they weren't investing in the ecosystem as promised, the EOS protocol itself was still very performant. And their engineering was very good. It lacked a lot of other things. In June 2021, Block One made their final code commit. So essentially, we knew from speaking to people who worked there or who maybe previously worked there that this was going to be their last code commit publicly, and that they were going to be focusing on a private exchange business that they were launching. So at that point, it's kind of like, who's going to support the protocol? Like, the writing was on the wall that this was going to be done. So essentially, the community that was left had to decide what to do from here. So Yves LaRose, our CEO of the foundation, he was the CEO of the number one node operator for years. So basically, the unofficial one of the unofficial community leaders of the EOS network for years anyway, coordinating the node operators to perform software upgrades or anything related to the network itself. And then myself, I basically had worked, like I said, for several projects within the EOS ecosystem. I also had my own platform, it was called the Everything EOS podcast, also a community. And essentially everything that I built as a community member, thousands of followers, at like the source of information, I was already the communication hub myself of the EOS network, because that support wasn't coming from the initial founders. So whenever we launched the foundation, essentially everything that I built up since 2018 became the ENF. Like the Twitter account, for example, even though we launched in 2021, you can go back to March 2018, that from when that account was formed. It started as a podcast. Literally, I was doing what you're doing now as a community member, and over time just built up that trust and reputation that allowed us to go to the network in September 2021 and essentially request funding. So the network only had one funding source, node operators, but it lacked all of the other things. It lacked coordination. So what we did was we approached the network, all of the node operators who essentially make the decisions on the chain, and we requested at the time about $20 million of legacy funding that was in an account. It was income generated by the network in its earlier years that just didn't have a purpose. It was just sitting in an account. So we requested that funding, and then also turned on essentially a 2% inflationary drip that could be continuous for perpetual funding long term. So that we approached the network with those two things, turn on an inflation drip and transfer the $20 million to kind of stand up the foundation. Once we stood up the foundation, the very first thing that we did was stop the bleeding. Over the years, because of the lack of community support from the initial founders who had all of the capital, we had to stop the bleeding. So we immediately deployed over $3 million in recognition grants. We gave $100,000 to 32 different projects to all community driven. Basically, we didn't have a framework in place yet to deploy capital in an efficient way. So we couldn't necessarily take applications in for new projects because you have to vet them and do due diligence. And we didn't have the capacity. We're a brand new foundation. It literally started with two people. And now we have over 50 full-time employees. And we also work with dozens of ecosystem partners, which is essentially hundreds of people being employed by the network right now, directly from the network. The initial thing we did was, one, we deployed capital to all of the existing projects. We didn't have to vet them because they had reputations. Like, we watched them. Essentially, I was on myself and Eve were on a three-year job application, a job interview for 3 years. So the network trusted us. Same with all of these 32 projects. We didn't need to do due diligence. We've seen them work for years. So we deployed that capital. The other thing that we did was we needed to assess everything else in the blockchain space. We knew EOS was playing from behind. And that's one of the benefits of the situation that we found ourselves in, was by playing from behind, you could see all of the mistakes that everyone else has made and skip those mistakes and just focus on going in the correct direction. So the other thing that we did at launch was we initiated a bunch of eight in the end, different working groups or think tanks, where we essentially deployed capital to the smartest people in the ecosystem, the builders, the people who had been in the ecosystem longest, gave them several $100,000 each under a multi-sig of the parties involved on those individual working groups. And they had different initiatives. One was APIs, one was wallets and client-side SDKs. Another was a Yield Plus, which is a liquidity subsidy program. EOS EVM was a working group that started as a working group. So we deployed capital to all of these think tanks. And what they were assigned to do was, one, collaborate together, because a lot of these independent entities and individuals had never collaborated before, because there's never a coordinating body or a funding body to enable them to collaborate. So we got all of the smartest people working together. They're getting paid to work together. And their job was essentially to do all of the due diligence and research of, what is everyone else doing that's really good? What are we doing that's really good? And where are all of the gaps, was essentially what they were assigned to do. And the end result of all of that research was something we called blue papers. They're essentially anywhere between 50 to 100 page documents of all of the research that they compiled over the course of several months, along with multiple proposals of the scope of the work that needed to be done from a technical standpoint and what it would cost to get that work done. So we found ourselves with several dozen worker proposals, essentially, that say it's like an a la carte menu of everything that EOS needs to be successful after comparing it with everything else in the space. And then we needed to prioritize and decide what initiatives that we would be funding. And the first in line to get that funding to build out those proposals were the people who, the smartest people in the room, who are the ones who wrote the proposals in the first place. So we got all of the smartest developers and teams together. They wrote a list of proposals, and then we prioritized which proposals we felt were had the highest impact for the network. And then we started deploying capital to fund those proposals to many of the individual teams who wrote the blue papers themselves. So that's what I mean by earlier whenever I said a multi-pronged approach. It's not just the ENF. We have a core engineering team, but we've empowered the entire ecosystem to work with us in parallel. The other thing that we did was we formed a coalition. So EOS itself is a DAO. Like, the ENF is empowered by a DAO, and the custodians of the DAO are the block producers of the network. Everything that we do, we have to get approval by the block producers. They're the ones who empower everything that we do. But there's also other blockchains that leverage the same technology as EOS, essentially clones or forks with their own flavors. So there's like the Wax blockchain, Telos blockchain, UX Network. There's several others, but those three that I mentioned, we formed a coalition with. So a DAO of DAOs, so to speak. So not only are we collaborating within our own ecosystem, but we formed a DAO of DAOs with these other blockchains, because they have the same priorities as us as far as what infrastructure could we fund or work together to develop that benefits all of us. And it doesn't matter if we're competitors, because we all need these things. Things like inter-blockchain communication, things like instant finality, things like better wallet and client-side SDKs to make it easier to develop on the native EOS or Antelope framework. So we formed that coalition with an initial $8 million of pooled funds. So what we did was we took a market cap weighted ratio of all of the four blockchains collaborating, pulled all of our capital together into a pool, we pulled capital together into an $8 million pool. So EOS covered 80% of that, and then the other chains covered roughly 20% collectively because of their market caps. But from EOS's standpoint, we work for the EOS token holders. Like, the ENF is fully accountable to the token holders, so we're obligated to get the best deals and the best price. And essentially, we got a 20% discount on all of the technology that we needed to have developed anyway. And we also did it in a collaborative way, which formed new partnerships, new friendships, new partnerships with these other blockchains that we previously didn't really have. We didn't have a body to partner with them, but there just wasn't that kind of collaboration before. And now with the Antelope IBC, which is inter-blockchain communication, essentially all of the chains that share the technology with EOS, they're all interoperable now. You could have cross-chain transactions between all of them, and that's going to continuously get better. We have instant finality is the next really big milestone coming. That's coming this September. Should be rolled out on mainnets, and that'll reduce finality time to around 1 to 3 seconds. And that also impacts the Antelope IBC, because you have to have actual finality to confirm transactions before you can consider them 100% irreversible. So that's kind of the final step for what's needed for doing like atomic transactions on a dynamically scalable base layer. And that's all going to factor into like what I talked about earlier, the EOS EVM being a single interface where underneath it you have this horizontally scalable base layer.
You know what I really like about your story, or EOS story, to put it that way? We see I would say vanishing founders all the time in crypto, right? And there are usually two scenarios, things that happen, right? Either the project completely dies over the next months, years, or there's a somewhat fragmented community that tries something but has no success at all, no direction at all. And for me, this sounds like I don't see that really often, right? I can think of many other examples that pulled that off, right? With that conviction, without being demoralized. That's actually pretty cool. Just from a community standpoint.
It was not a fun experience necessarily for the entire first 3 years. There was a honeymoon phase for sure, but then once all of the smoke cleared, it was very uncomfortable. But like I said, the benefit is, you can see from others' mistakes. And during the time period where things that we expected to happen from the founding body of the technology and the essentially the blockchain, we had a pretty good idea of all of the things that were expected or the things that needed to be done because we expected them to be done over the course of several years. There were things outlined in the initial white paper in 2017 that never got fulfilled, for example. Interblockchain communication was in that white paper. This company, even with their $4 billion, never executed on many of their promises from the initial white paper. In the roughly year and a half to 2 years since the ENF has existed, we've executed either ourselves or through our coalition on almost every single promise that was undelivered in the white paper. We've done it in a very short period of time, and we were able to do it with much less capital than that founding company. And that kind of ties into something that recently was announced, and that is us as the ENF, as a coordinating body, we're in the process of coordinating token holders who purchased tokens between June 2017 and September 2021, who were essentially affected by the promises and expectations made by Block One during that time period. So the expectation of the EOS token having more utility because of the promises made by this company, Block One. And by more utility, I mean having the tooling that was promised that would add more utility to the EOS token, and just expectations of things that would be delivered that led people to invest in the EOS token. So since announcing, so essentially the ENF didn't exist during that time period for this class action. So we're not necessarily taking part in the class action, but what we're doing is we're coordinating all of the efforts needed to stand up a class action. So supporting the EOS community and the EOS token holders to enable them to coordinate, we put out a call to action. We've received hundreds of emails from individuals affected by this. And we're in the next thing that'll be expected will be there'll be more formal messaging over the next couple of weeks. So I'm not going to really add too much right now, but if you are an affected party, if you're watching or listening to this and you were an EOS token holder previously, and maybe you left because you were disappointed in what occurred during the first 3-4 years of the EOS blockchain, then you should email legal@eosnetwork.com to tell your story. Just sending that email will put you on a list, and you'll receive all of the automated updates. But there is a class action in progress, and this is actually the second class action that Block One is facing. It's completely separate from another one that has been ongoing since 2020. Won't really get into that one. So we're also coordinating. What we do is we coordinate the efforts of the token holders in the best interest of the token holders, and we're going to hold bad actors accountable, or do what we can within the legal framework to hold them accountable. I don't think I didn't really answer your question, but I did want to plug that in because it is highly relevant, because like I said, there will be new messaging coming out over the next couple of weeks. And you also said like there's a lot of projects that do this, but at a much smaller scale. If they if you're an NFT project that did a mint and sold $1 million of NFTs and you rug and disappear, that's terrible, but it happens all of the time. But it's $1 million. This is $4 billion that essentially was abstracted from the Ethereum community. If you really think about it, they raised $4 billion of ETH when ETH was under $1,000. ETH was like $800 during some of that period, and all of that capital was kind of just being sold off into fiat over the course of a year-long ICO. Like, this entity literally stifled one of the 2017-18 bull market through $4 billion of selling pressure on the Ethereum token. So their impact was huge on the Web3 ecosystem as a whole. And they had every opportunity to fulfill their promises. There was a dark period between 2019 up until DeFi summer in 2020, where everyone was starved of capital. Not a lot was going on. Consensus was laying off employees. And at that time, Block One was sitting on a $4 billion war chest and could have been deploying capital to the builders to really like accelerate the ecosystem growth during that time, but it didn't happen. And over the almost two years since the ENF has existed, give or take a few months, in the year and a half to 2 years that the ENF has existed, we've showcased that. That's why all of this information is coming out now instead of whenever the ENF first launched, because we needed to showcase that all of these promises that were made during the ICO and after the ICO, that it was actually possible to execute on them. Any excuse that was made of why it couldn't be executed on is complete bullshit, because we've showcased that it could all have been done with a lot less resources. So that's the reason why this is happening now, and really excited to move on to the next steps of that. But it will be a multi-year process. It will kind of be going on in the background while we focus on what we do. But our goal is to drive value back to the EOS token holders through this legal process.
Sounds a bit like, you know, that old story, David versus Goliath, right? Big one, small one. And it's pretty cool, you know?
Very, very much. Like, blockchain and Web3 is, in a lot of ways, meant to disrupt the incumbents, the banks, and the existing system. And what we found out was that, essentially, this entity was the bankers and the 1%. So it's very much feels that way. David versus Goliath, 99% versus 1%. It's a big battle, but I do believe that EOS stands as the epitome of what Web3 is all about. I think it's a story that I continue to retell, because it is different than any other project that I'm aware of. I don't know of any other project that kind of has its stewards or its centralized body. Like, the ENF is a centralized entity. We are not a DAO, but we are employed by a DAO. A DAO selected it. The ENF is essentially like a CEO of the network. We don't have any governance rights. Everything has to go through the network. But as far as the funding mechanism that gives us the ability to deploy capital and do it in a centralized way, and coordinate efforts in a centralized way and form partnerships in a centralized way, we're all empowered by a DAO to do so. And it's super powerful, and it's something that I think a lot of other projects attain to become, and EOS has that now. And that's also really important in the current regulatory environment. As we saw last week, we saw the SEC rule against Binance and Coinbase, and I totally disagree with all of the regulation by enforcement, but it's the environment that we live in. We saw that a lot of the top projects that have launched over the last couple of years, the SEC kind of called them out as securities. And whether they are or are not is irrelevant, I guess, at this point, as far as I'm concerned. It's relevant to the industry. But I feel strongly that EOS is in a very good position to not have to deal with a lot of the issues that other chains that have launched more recently, with centralization from the onset, centralization in the token distribution, projects that hold 30% of the token supply, so they could essentially govern the chain through their staking rates. We don't have any of that. And it's very decentralized. One of the tests, I believe, that can showcase whether or not a chain is decentralized is if you totally cut off the head, would the project still exist? So if you took Polygon and you cut the head off and you, Polygon Labs died tomorrow and they just fired everyone, they just closed up shop for whatever reason, would Polygon continue to exist or would it not? Like, does it have the means to do so? And EOS proved that the head kind of self-mutilated itself and kind of left it on its own, and the chain survived. And not only did it survive, but like this thing was born out of it, the ENF, and we're totally empowered by a DAO. We're totally empowered by the network itself, which is essentially powered by the token holders. And we have a track record of 5 years to showcase all of the reasons why we are a decentralized community and why even us as a centralized body have no control over the network. We have no governance rights. We have no token supply to even attempt to change governance. We receive a constant 2% inflationary drip. Our treasury is minimal, single digit percent at best, like 1-2% of the token supply at any given time at the most. And that's if no capital is being deployed, which almost all of it is constantly deployed back into the community. So we have a lot of things working to our benefit in the current regulatory environment. It's very unfortunate the regulatory environment we're in the United States at least. But there's also a lot of great things happening in other places. We have, for example, Hong Kong office. We're very bullish on the Asian markets as a whole. Most of the EOS token holders are Asia-based. So that's a big part of our foundation also, is even though I speak English, the majority of the foundation is in the West. The majority of our token holders are actually in the East. And a lot of our focus over the next couple of months, or next foreseeable future, is in the Asian marketplaces. So China, Japan, Korea, Singapore, that's been a big focus of ours for the last year and a half and will continue to be. And there's a lot of great things happening in Hong Kong and we're looking to expand our footprint there.
That sounds awesome. Okay, super cool. I would say we heard a lot of, we talked about community, about the token itself, about the tech stack. And I guess for listeners, it could be really interesting now if they somewhat, you know, think, oh wow, that sounds pretty cool. What are there some, I would say, free call to actions or something like that, maybe, where you say, hey, well, if you're interested in that, maybe have a look at this, or you can support us here, or you already said that with your, if you have been a token holder, please reach out on that email address. But what else would you add?
Yeah, so I guess it depends on which user persona you fall under. So if you are a Solidity developer, we're actively seeking out partnerships and collaborative efforts with other EVM projects and EVM tooling to integrate with our EOS EVM. We have a grant framework available for funding at eosnetwork.com. We also, and that grant framework is managed by the ENF, but we also have a system called Pomelo, which is very similar to Gitcoin on Ethereum. It's a quadratic funding mechanism, which it essentially works for us as ENF as a black box. We deploy matching funds into Pomelo, and then the token holders themselves decide how that capital is deployed through a quadratic funding mechanism. That's currently in season 6 right now, so it's open for grants. Anyone could submit a grant through Pomelo, and that's Pomelo, P-O-M-E-L-O, .io. Anyone can submit a grant. We have pools for GameFi, pools for EVM, pools for native EOS, different matching funds. And what quadratic funding allows is it allows the community to decide who gets what. So it's through a donation system. I don't want to get into the weeds too much, but every one EOS that the community contributes to a particular grant. So you, Kevin, if you wrote a grant to do something, every one EOS that was contributed to your grant, it's essentially a vote by the community. And those EOS essentially get matched by multiples. So one EOS could actually get matched by 10 EOS, for example. And you would receive the funds. The matching funds come from the ENF, but the votes come from the token holders. And it offers benefits for numbers. So the more unique accounts that contribute, unique accounts matter more than the actual capital donated because it showcases strength in numbers. And in the back end, there's a lot of Cybel resistance tooling to make sure that people aren't necessarily multi-accounting. So that's a very strong call to action is you could support the ecosystem by making donations. There's hundreds of grants. We've deployed over $2.5 million through Pomelo. You could just donate to grants and support your favorite projects, or you could apply for grant funding yourselves. So if you're a content creator, you could apply to create EOS related content or developer guides or infrastructure dApps. The main thing is that it should be a public good, which is something that is non-rivalrous and benefits everyone. And then there's also the grant framework. The grant framework limitations are it has to be open source code, because if the community is we believe heavily in everything we do being open source, because that's how you build on top of the shoulders of giants. Anything that the network funds through the grant framework has to be open source. And the reason is because if you're being funded through public goods funding, then what you are building needs to benefit everyone and not just yourself. So that doesn't mean that the entire project needs to be open source, but whatever component you're seeking out funding for needs to be open source. That way it could benefit everyone building on the ecosystem. And then we mentioned anyone that falls under the class of people who invested in the EOS token with expectations from block one to increase the utility of the EOS token from 2017 until September 2021. They should email legal at eosnetwork.com. Just give a little bit of information. Those are the big call to actions. Developers definitely should reach out if you're looking to deploy on either the EOS EVM or EOS Native, where, like I said, we have a lot of BD efforts, so it shouldn't be too difficult to set up an intro call.
Awesome. Sounds great. And by the way, for the audience and also for you, Zach, I will definitely put these emails and links into the video description so that people don't have to, you know.
Awesome.
Okay. In that sense, Zach, if you, I don't know, something left to say, otherwise I would say thank you for your time. Was really awesome. Learned a lot myself. And I'm also a bit, you know, wouldn't say inspired, because that sounds so, you know, flashy, but somewhat in that direction, right?
I appreciate the platform to talk to people who may not be familiar with this story, really. And I get this reaction a lot when I meet people at conferences and things like that. So I really appreciate the opportunity and the platform very much.
Sure. Thanks for coming on. That sense. Thanks everyone for watching.
WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.